from LPM.
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
Hi, I'm Kyla.
And this is Jay.
And you're listening to Strange Fruit Podcast.
Welcome back to listeners. Doc, I am super excited for today's returning guest. She is a reporter, of course, in the Washington Post, who covers gender and family issues for the Post. And the story we're going to talk about today is just so fascinating. We're going to meet a person who is becoming a new parent. But it's not really a conventional parenthood story, so let's get right into it. So, listeners, please welcome back to the show Washington Post reporter Samantha Smith. Hey, Samantha!
Hi.
How are you?
Thanks so much for having me back.
Yeah, last time you were here, what did we talk about last time you were here? What was that story? Do you remember?
I think we talked about a So Queer class that
we
I wrote
did,
about.
We did. Oh,
yeah.
Kind of gender fluid clothing, you know, and teaching people how to sew to kind of...
I must admit, yeah. I have not taken up sewing, but I do have a hot glue gun, and I've been making quite a few little pieces of stuff.
But yeah, I think at the time I was still wrapping up this story because I had spent several months on it following Brayden through their pregnancy.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, so in your story, we of course meet Brayden, and your story takes place over several months. First of all, who is Brayden? Give us in a nutshell, who is Brayden? And why are they not a conventional or traditional parent? And then we'll kind of go into a bit of the story.
So Brayden, I actually first met Brayden because I was interviewing different non-binary people in the area. I'm here in D.C. and Brayden lives out in Virginia. And, you know, I knew they were non-binary. And then they mentioned like halfway through the conversation that they actually were also pregnant. And I thought, oh, that's interesting because I, you know, it's not a story you hear that often. And Brayden actually had for a short while had identified as a transgender man and had started hormone treatment. And but then at a certain point stopped taking, stopped the hormone treatment because as they were kind of exploring their identity more, realized that they did not want to identify as a transgender man, but rather as non-binary, that they always felt that they were not a woman, but they also didn't want to be identified as a man. And so even though they're more masculine than feminine, they're non-binary and go by they, them pronouns. But they always really wanted to be a mom at the same time. And so that was part of the reason why they wanted to make sure they, you know, they were still going to be able to have children. And then kind of unexpectedly, only, you know, a few months after they stopped the hormone treatment, they actually got pregnant. And so even though it was a surprise, it was a welcome surprise. And Brayden was ecstatic to be a mom, which is a word that I was surprised to know Brayden actually really identifies with. Even though they're not a woman, they identify very, very strongly with the word mom.
And I love that. And so I also was initially perplexed, but then, of course, I understood it. So even though Brayden went on a journey from over the course of their life from but lesbian to trans male identified to now being non-binary, the one thing, the kind of one gendered part that they really looked forward to was being a mom. And so you talked in your story that even though they were essentially a tomboy in their teenage years, all the neighborhood kids called them mom. Talk a bit about why Brayden was called mom by the kids growing up and what kind of stuff they did for them.
Yeah, Brayden always was kind of a nurturing figure, you know, always had much younger half siblings and was always kind of taking in these neighborhood kids, you know, having them come over after school, you know, to have mac and cheese or just hang out. And so Brayden was kind of a motherly figure to a lot of people. And actually, one of those friends gave Brayden a tattoo on their foot that says the word mom. And so even like long before Brayden had, you know, long before Brayden became pregnant, Brayden really identified with this kind of nurturing, motherly person, which is, I think, so interesting because it was really the only, in all the time I spent with Brayden, it was one of the few very kind of quote-unquote feminine qualities, like stereotypically feminine qualities that Brayden really identified with. Brayden has always otherwise felt very masculine. And, you know, you talk to Brayden and you see Brayden, and so much about Brayden feels so masculine, because that's really, they would identify, I guess they're a word that they often identify by is trans masculine. So not transgender, not a transgender man, but more masculine than feminine. And yet they really are connected to this kind of this idea of being a mom and being the caretaker and the nurturing parent, and not necessarily with the word dad and you know, it, and not just parent, but specifically mom, which I thought was very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I love the nuance in Brayden a lot. And in your piece, you talk about how what was often frustrating throughout Brayden's pregnancy was the doctor's office, and then even Brayden's birth mother getting their pronouns wrong, referring to them in a gendered way. Talk to our listeners a bit about why you think, and maybe in your conversations with Brayden, it's so difficult for a lot of Americans not only to understand trans identity, but non-binary trans identity, using they, them, there, as opposed to this binary he, she.
Right. And I think that, you know, we've for many years now written about the transgender community, and I think people are starting to be able to wrap their heads around, you know, transgender identity, because it's still, in many cases, you know, at least when it's binary, they can kind of understand it more clearly. But a lot of people have trouble understanding that there's that gender is a spectrum, and for a lot of people, there's a lot of kind of nuance, and there are many different, you know, ways to identify between male and female, right? And non-binary can mean that you don't identify as either gender, or it can mean that you identify as a bit of both, some days more than others. It can mean that you identify as a kind of totally different gender. And so it really depends on the person. And that's what I loved about Brayden's story, is that it wasn't necessarily expected or easy to explain. It was very kind of nuanced and unique, but it is still challenging, because, you know, for Brayden grew up in kind of a blue collar working class family in suburban Virginia, and kind of like the baby's father is a construction worker. You know, the mom lives in the South now, and so I feel like the people around them, they didn't know, like Brayden's dad didn't know anyone who was even transgender. And Brayden's dad had never heard the term non-binary before Brayden started identifying that way. So this is something totally new and really hard to understand for Brayden's family and community. And that's also what I really liked about their story, is that it's not, you know, we often think about these communities being kind of in liberal, progressive cities, but they're everywhere. I mean, and sometimes in families where you don't expect it, and there are people who are trying to kind of grapple with that and understand it.
So who are some of the other characters that we meet over the course of this story? So we of course have Brayden, who's the central figure, and you alluded to Brayden's mom, who kind of struggled with their pronouns, but then you also mentioned one, Brayden's father. And so although they had not met, he had not met before a transgender person, what was his relationship like towards Brayden? Was it one of support? And then you mentioned the father of Brayden's child, which then you say like, what? What do you mean? And so talk a bit about who he is and what his dynamic is, because apparently he knew Brayden way back when Brayden was a girl. So what is the dynamic between both Brayden's father and Brayden's, I guess, partner to Brayden?
Yeah, so Brayden's father has just kind of been rolling with the punches and is very supportive. And Brayden's actually very close with both of their parents, including, they even said, with their mother, even though she had a harder time with the pronouns and with the with calling Brayden as opposed to their dead name. Brayden still loves their mom and is, you know, really wanted their mom there when the baby was born and whatnot. The dad just is even, I think, Brayden was living with their dad this whole time, and Brayden's very close with their dad, and you know, he's just kind of a very supportive person, and is just trying to figure it out as he goes along. And sometimes he'll mess up the pronouns, but he'll even correct himself. Like when I noticed that, I thought it was really sweet that even when Brayden wasn't around, and we were just talking about Brayden in the third person, Brayden's dad would correct himself when he would say he versus, because I think actually for a long time, Brayden's dad had gotten used to calling Brayden his son. because that's how Braden identified for a bit, for a couple of years. And even would, you know, the dad would even introduce Braden to his colleagues as his son, Braden. So now he's like, okay, now it's not son. I need to kind of figure out how, you know, Braden wants to be identified. And so he's just been trying to adjust as much as possible, but making mistakes along the way. And Braden's very patient with that. The baby daddy, he was, you know, I think had a harder time grappling with it because he had, as you mentioned, dated Braden back in high school. There are pictures on the fridge of them at prom, and they reconnected more recently. And I think, no, like grappling with the idea that Braden wasn't a woman, I think that forced him to think about his own sexuality. And I don't think he was always comfortable with that, with questioning, like, does this mean I'm not totally straight now? Like, I think that that's something that he was really having a hard time with. But you know, I even noticed that during the course of the pregnancy that he became a lot more supportive, and just kind of was, you know, making an effort to, you know, here and there, to identify Braden the way they wanted to be identified. But yeah, it's definitely, I think, been a challenge for them. And it was interesting how I think with the pregnancy, it even makes it even more challenging because so many of the things that you talk about when it comes to pregnancy and, you know, all these doctor's visits and, you know, references to Braden's body. I mean, so much of that is feminine, right? I mean, the doctors, mm-hmm. the hospital is even called the women's hospital. So mm-hmm. I think that makes it even more difficult for family members who are already trying to make sure they're identifying Braden correctly, then throw in pregnancy. It just makes it even more difficult for a lot of them.
No, certainly, certainly. In your piece, you talk about how Braden was really anxious about the anticipation of the baby's designated sex, and how Braden felt that it might be difficult for them to raise a girl child, but also didn't want to get in on the trend of trying to raise a baby and was really excited about the anticipation of raising a boy child, right? Talk to our listeners a bit about how, even though Braden themselves identifies as a non-binary person, that they were hesitant about raising their child as a they be, but also hesitant about, you know, kind of parenting a girl child.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is where I again, love how kind of unexpected it is. I think you would expect yeah. somebody who is non-binary to also want to kind of you know, reject mm-hmm. some of the gender norms for their child. But Braden just more than anything wanted to raise a normal kid. I mean, they use the word normal and, you know, what does normal even mean? But they kept referring to normal, right? To just, mm-hmm. I just want my kid to grow up, you know, loved and happy. And I want him to, you know, once Braden found out he was a boy, that, you know, the baby was going to be a boy, it was like, all right, this is I'm raising a boy, and unless I ever hear otherwise, I'm going to give him this this childhood as a boy. And I think there was a little bit of relief there also because Braden didn't get to have that childhood, that boyhood as a kid, because Braden had always, even though Braden was, you know, a tomboy and had always felt more masculine than feminine, they didn't get to have that experience since they were raised as a girl. And I think this was an opportunity to be able to give that to the baby and to Owen. And I think it would have been maybe a bit more difficult if Braden even said this, it would have been more difficult if it had been a girl, because so much of Braden's life has been rejecting femininity and girlhood. Mm-hmm. But I think this is an exciting opportunity for Braden to be able to raise a boy. And I think Braden wants Owen to understand that his mom is not a woman. I think that that's the conversation they're eventually going to want to have. And, you know, once, you know, their son is old enough to talk about it. But I think beyond that, they want Owen to be whoever he wants to be. And Braden kept saying, I don't want to raise a gender warrior, you know, because I think that that's something that's seen, I don't know, that people might make the assumptions that somebody who is in the LGBT community wants to raise their child to be an activist for mm-hmm. LGBTQ issues. And that's not Braden at all. Braden just wants to, like, raise a kid who's, you know, going to have, and even, you know, Braden wrote this really sweet letter saying, like, be interested in whatever you want. If you're interested in science or sports or, you know, theater, like, I want to be there and be able to support that. And so I think that was their main priority.
No, certainly. I was going to ask you, if you and Brayden, throughout the course of you all talking over, you know, a couple of months about their story and their pregnancy journey, was there any way that Brayden expressed, like, how they wish they would have had certain support from their parents, for instance? Like, what is some advice that you could give possibly, you know, from your conversations with a non-binary person who just went through pregnancy about how parents of non-binary children, the best kind of tools or ways that they could support their child and their journey of self-discovery?
Yeah, I mean, I think Brayden really appreciated the effort that their dad made, for example, to try the pronouns. And, you know, and Brayden knows that they're going to make mistakes, but the effort, showing that you are trying to understand it, I think really went a long way. And, you know, because it's hard because I think, you know, for example, Brayden's mom really wanted them to wear a dress to a wedding that they were going to be going to, and comments like that just made it even more difficult to feel affirmed in their gender. And I think Brayden is a great, so many non-binary people that I've talked to are very patient and understanding and realize that it's going to take some adjustment. And they're willing to, like, they want to have deep conversations about it and want to, you know, have their parents understand. And I think when the parents have made that effort, and, you know, to reach out and to try to understand it, what it really means for their child, right? Because so much of this varies from person to person, and it's really important, I think, to understand what that means to each person. We actually are going to continue to write about this, and we have another story coming up soon. A colleague is working on trying to grapple with that, kind of how the family adjusts and how it, you know, it is a generational, there is a generational gap too. I think it's harder for older generations to understand, but you know, you can see in examples like Brayden's story that it's a work in progress, and you know, people like Brayden are often willing to have ongoing conversations about it and know that people are going to make mistakes, and that's okay.
Yeah, so okay. You mentioned that that Brayden kind of struggled, but that folk who are staffed, the hospitals and the doctor's offices, they sometimes struggled with addressing Brayden by their correct pronouns or still referring to their previous name. What were some other ways in which Brayden kind of was uneasy or even was amused at some of the ways in which parenthood is marketed towards folk who are pregnant? So I mean, you described, for example, when Brayden would go to the Buy My Baby store to buy parental clothes or to buy, like, supplies, they all kind of had names like boobie this or titty that, or, like, what are some of the things that Brayden felt uneasy
and
about in terms of
the
way they're feminized?
It really opened my eyes to how much of pregnancy in general, just kind of, even for people who aren't non-binary, you know, even people who identify as women, they might find that many, like, pregnancy clothes, for example, are very feminine. And much of the kind of, you know, you would even see in the gift shop at the hospital that all of the kind of clothes and gifts were very feminine. When you think about mothers, you think about, like, you know, pink, very fitted, you know, floral prints, stuff like that. And a lot of these maternity sections. And, you know, I think what was fascinating to me is that so much of the industry for pregnant mothers is extremely feminine, and like the diaper bags and stuff like that. And I think Brayden got really frustrated with that. And as would people who just, you know, are maybe pregnant moms who just don't like those kinds of clothes, right? And who tend to kind of be gender nonconforming in a way, which I think is important to keep in mind. And Brayden also, you know, really struggled in the hospital setting because this hospital, I even saw how it improved over the course of, you know, the months, because I went to many doctor's appointments with Brayden. But at first, you know, because Brayden hadn't legally changed their name yet. And so the name on all of the hospital forms was Brittany. And so they would call, you know, they would say Miss Schertzinger in the hospital, in the waiting room. And Brittany had corrected them at first, but then just kind of got tired of correcting them constantly, so they just kind of would go with it, because they also didn't want it to affect their treatment, their care. They wanted to, you know, they didn't want to kind of create any conflicts. And so they didn't push back a lot of the time. But yeah, I mean, even after they had explained it, it was still a struggle, and you could see how, over time they started just going with B. I think that was like a nickname they were able to use for Brayden. But so much of the hospital setting, it's all referring to mothers and women, and it hasn't yet adjusted to people like Brayden. And I think increasingly they're going to have to, because we are also seeing a lot of transgender men who are becoming pregnant. And I think there's definitely a movement, and an increasingly a shift in thinking when we're talking about reproductive issues, for example, calling it reproductive health, not women's health. So I think that, yeah, this is just an example of how it forces us to rethink so much about pregnancy, but also about parenthood. And, you know, another thing that came up that I thought was really interesting was when Brayden was on the phone with the pediatrician's office, trying to schedule a first doctor's appointment for Owen after he was born. On the phone, Brayden's voice still sounds really deep because of all of the testosterone. And so you talk to Brayden and it sounds like a man. And the person on the other line at the pediatrician's office kept asking for the mother, like, can you give me the birth date of the mom? Because they didn't think that the person on the line was the mom. And that really offended Brayden, because Brayden felt like, why is it that, I don't know, they wanted to, it kind of is going against, it was kind of the opposite of many of the struggles that they faced before. You know, finally, for once, here Brayden was actually being affirmed as more masculine, but that actually bothered Brayden because they wanted to be seen as the primary caretaker. You know, they were like, I just carried this child for 9 months and like gave birth to him, and like, I want to be seen as the primary parent. And why is it that because I have a deep voice, I'm the dad? You know, I think that was very interesting to me to see how there is a certain, the word mom and the idea of being the mother is sometimes, there's a lot that goes with that. You're seen as the primary caretaker and the, you know, the main caregiver, but you know, it makes us rethink that too. It's like, why is that? And are there dads out there who would like to be, you know, I think it just forces us to rethink parenthood and, mm-hmm. And the different roles that, that parents play.
Certainly. So I want you, before we let you go, I want to touch on a portion of the story that I think is really important. And that's like, to be clear, Brayden, although they wanted to be a parent or even to be a mom, the process wasn't necessarily easy. That there are parts of a swollen belly and growing breast and even breastfeeding that really made them uncomfortable. What was Brayden's strategy? What was Brayden's coping mechanism? What did they tell themselves as a way of kind of getting through the discomfort of having, you know, vaginal exams and folks touching their belly? What did they tell themselves to kind of get through this as a way of remembering the end goal?
Yeah. This is one of those examples of intense dysphoria, gender dysphoria that Brayden would feel on an everyday basis, you know, even beyond what they would usually feel in their body, because everything about their body was suddenly extremely stereotypically feminine, you know, the pregnant belly. And there's so much attention on you as a pregnant mom, as so many pregnant mothers can relate. And Brayden was, while they were extremely bothered by that, they also just tried to focus on Owen, and they just kept saying, this is for him, this is for my baby, and you know, my body's just kind of a vessel right now, so I'm just going to have to unfortunately put up with this intense dysphoria and anxiety and discomfort for the next 9 months until I have this baby, because you know, he's what I want most in the world, and this is like the at once the most difficult but most joyful thing Brayden has ever done, because like they were both so connected to this idea of being a mom and so connected to their, you know, their baby and their belly, but they, you know, the process itself was extremely painful. So I think it's a story about sacrifice, and the sacrifice that a lot of moms go through when they're having babies. And I think there's just an extra element of Brayden's that creates even more discomfort and pain, but I think it's relatable for a lot of moms, honestly.
I love it. I love it. I'll tell you what I appreciate the most about your story, Samantha, is that Just as we live in a non-binary world, I mean, the story is non-binary in that, you know, to some degree, Brayden wants to be just like any other parent or any other mom, but to a large degree, they also would never be that way. The same way they want to be a mom, they don't want to be feminized, right? And so, in the same way, there's so many different dynamics existing at once within the story. You know, even as a queer person myself, you know, there were still things that I learned about other queer folk in our community, and I just really appreciated. You know, the kind of, it was really, really in-depth reporting. Also just some wonderful photos by your photographer. And so I just really appreciate you shedding light on a person who wants what lots of folks want, that is to be a parent, but also to help remind us that parenthood doesn't have to be so binary, doesn't have to be so gendered, mm-hmm. and that in as much as we're all different and that's okay, there are some things that are universal for a lot of people. And so I just really, really appreciate this story. Are you going to keep in touch with Brayden and keep us posted on what life is like for them?
I hope so. I've been luckily following Brayden on Facebook, and baby Owen is growing like crazy and he seems to be doing well. And I'm really interested in seeing kind of how Owen sees the world and understands his mom. And, you know, I think that so much can change in the next few years in terms of how society sees non-binary communities. And, you know, even just a few years ago, we weren't writing about this in this in-depth of a way. And so, I'm really interested to see kind of how everyone adjusts to these new definitions of, you know, of gender and parenthood.
Well, great. Well, please give Brayden and Owen our love. Listeners, our guest today has been Washington Post reporter Samantha Smith. Samantha, please take care and come back anytime.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Samantha.
Have a good one.
Bye. The work we do on Strange Fruit wouldn't be possible without your support. If we've made you laugh,
or made you think,
we hope you'll consider chipping in.
Visit donate.strangefruitpod.org.
That's donate.strangefruitpod.org.
Thank you.
Welcome back. You're listening to Strange Fruit Podcast.
All right. So we have one of our fruitcakes on the phone, but also not just a fruitcake, but a longtime friend of ours that we know from U of L.
Yes.
Who is now in grad school, that is working on a very, very important, what do you call it, like a dissertation project or a research project? What is this classified as, Doc?
Well, I feel like this is your dissertation, isn't it, Alden?
Alden Jones, welcome to the show. Is this your diss project?
It is. It's my dissertation.
It's the dissertation.
I love it.
Yes.
I don't even have a bachelor's, so I'm like, this is foreign territory to me. Auden, welcome to the show, homie. First of all, introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them who you are, and then we'll get into what you're asking of our listeners.
Sure. So I am a doctoral candidate at the University of Texas at Austin. I came here after I left U of L. To study higher education. And the thing that I kept running into as I studied was that what we knew about Black trans folks and their experiences in college was often caught up in other studies, right? Like an LGBTQ study, right? Where lots of people are, and there weren't a ton of focused studies about the Black trans and Black queer experience in college. There's more about the Black queer experience in college, but either way, it looked like a huge hole to me and it made me sad. And so I designed my whole dissertation project around it because I don't think that absence should exist. And so my goal is to talk to Black trans women and femmes that have any experience in college, as long as they were enrolled for a semester in any kind of college, as long as they're 18. And I just want to ask them about what college was like for them and write it down and essentially pass the mic and, you know, amplify voices that don't get to sit in rooms that I'm privileged to sit in.
I love it.
So it's Black trans women in all types of colleges, universities. So that means that they could have gone to beauty school, for instance, for a semester.
Yeah. Or nursing school.
Okay.
Either. Okay, good.
Or, yeah, nursing school, stuff like that. So it's open to all.
I love it.
Education.
Black trans women and films. Auden, talk a bit about how you identify yourself. That way folk have an idea of like, okay, who am I going to be talking to? Will they get my life experiences or not? How do you self-identify as the researcher on this project?
Yeah, so I usually say that I'm trans masculine. I don't really identify with the binary, but I use they, them pronouns. I was assigned female at birth, and I have used medical interventions to transition my physical being.
Gotcha.
So but I am white and, like I said, more masculine. And so I designed my study to do as much as I can to get out of the way of voices that quieted by whiteness.
Overlooked, yeah, got you. The only reason I asked that, listeners, is because, you know, we always go back to like Jenny Livingston's Experience is Burning, and then oftentimes who the storyteller is, who the researcher is, what their lens is, can skew or slant a study. And so I wanted to point out to folks that you are also part of the T family, because that may, in case there's any reluctance, for example, having some cis gay dude, you know, who doesn't get a lot of stuff. And so there's going to be some level of understanding that you bring to the study. So you mentioned over 18. Has spent at least one semester in any kind of college, higher education situation. How can folks get in touch with you to be a part of this study? Is there, just how can folks get in touch with you if they want more information or they want to join the study?
Sure. If they want more information or want to join the study, they can email me at alden.jones@utexas.edu. And then we just talk from there about finding a good time to chat after that. So,
they don't have to be in Texas. They don't have to be in person meetings. A person can be anywhere in the U.S. and perhaps even international. I mean, we have international listenership. So should this be just mostly people who are in the United States?
It's
going to school in the United States rather.
Yeah.
Okay. We got you.
Yeah. So anybody that's been to college in the U.S.
Gotcha. So that's Alden Jones, A-L-D-E-N, Alden.Jones at the letter U, Texas.edu. Alden, we are happy to be able to amplify your study. It is great to hear your voice. You've been gone for a couple of years, but it's good to hear your voice and see you on Facebook. We wish you the best of luck with the study. We fully expect an invitation when you go to defend your dissertation.
Well, you're absolutely more than welcome, but I hear sort of a anticlimactic moment where you tell everybody what you found out and they're like, okay, good, now go publish it.
That's good. Well, hey, it's a feat nonetheless. So please take care, my friend. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye, Alden.
Well, you know what, Doc? We are out of time.
Out of time.
We got to go. We got to do it again next week, but for now, we are out of time. Say goodbye to the people.
Bye.
Bye, everybody. Strange Fruit is produced by Louisville Public Media. Our engineer is Koja Toshiro, who also composed our theme music. For more information about Strange Fruit, visit strangefruitpod.org. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at strangefruitpod.
The views expressed on Strange Fruit do not reflect those of Louisville Public Media, its staff, or its underwriters. Strange Fruit is produced by me, Kyla Story.
And me, Jason Gardner.
Thanks for listening.
Support for LPM Podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.